Oh, my name's Fuzzy, and
you have a recovery date.
August the 7th, 16 years ago.
Okay, and where?
I got clean at Impact Recovery House.
Thanks, Fuzzy. I know you need longer arms. We need glasses these days. I just want to say one thing before I introduce Chuck, and that is the way that I know all these people, these dinosaurs of Narcotics Anonymous, is because I was on the program for 5 years, from 1975 till 1981, and I'm one of the most blessed people because I came back to this program less than a year ago. And all these people, they had not forgotten me, and they still loved me. I feel real fortunate for that. And one of the people that still loved me and I love very much and has always been very special to my heart, I'd like to introduce Chuck Skinner. Chuck Skinner!
Hi, I'm Chuck, and I'm an addict. And my clean date is May the 15th, 1961. Before we go any farther, this being Dinosaurs Day, I want to tell you that you're 10 minutes, you're 1 hour, your 1 week, your 1 year, or whatever time you have, is as important to you as my 32 years is to me. Hey! There is only one thing that I can do that you can't. You see, I can become newer than you just like that. But the only way you're going to get 32 years is one day at a time. Also, before I go any further, I'd like to introduce my stepson and his wife, Donald and Margaret Perriman. They weren't babies. Would you stand up? They weren't babies when I married their mother, and they knew goddamn well that I was a little strange. But they accepted me into the family, and we get along pretty good, you know. All due to this program. I'm sure that you've heard enough what a terrible son of a bitch I was, what happened, and how wonderful I am today. So I'm going to deviate from that somewhat and give you some opinions, and I want you to understand out in front that these are my opinions. Opinions are like rear ends. We all have one. And like rear ends, unless cleansed and taken care of, they can become very stinky sometimes. When I was using drugs, a drug addict and a homosexual were about 10 degrees below a baby raper. And of course, I would admit it to anything, being as I'm paramilitary, I would have admitted to anything other than being homosexual. That I would have been a baby raper, whatever they wanted to make it. The only places that I knew about to where there was any help at all was Fort Worth and Leavenworth and Fort Worth. And there they gave you a lobotomy if you were lucky. Otherwise, they just ripped you up with electricity till you had no brain left. I did that for myself later on. And the policeman had the other cure for drug addicts. I never expected to live past 30. Because drug addicts in those days, when you became useless, somebody gave you a hot shot because drug addicts become number one snitches. So they got rid of you. Anyhow, There was no such thing back in the Midwest, and I am a redneck from the Midwest, as Narcotics Anonymous. So I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I got my start. And I'm here to tell you today that you'll get out of the program whatever you come here for. I'm also here to tell you that if unless you follow the principles and the traditions, you will lose that along with every other loving thing you've accomplished along the way. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous out of the penitentiary. I did not come to get clean. I come to get out of the stay out of the penitentiary. That was my primary purpose. And had I gotten nothing else out of this program other than staying out of the penitentiary, it would have been perfectly all right. But I've gotten so much more. Prior to getting clean this time, I don't know how I did it, but I am another guy wound up at an NA meeting in Sun Valley. We were both loaded. And my interpretation of that at that time was, here was one old man administering last rites to two lames on the floor. The other thing I tried was sitting on. I went down, talked to Chuck Dietrich for about 5 minutes. He told me he was God. I looked up on the banister, and here's two assholes with shaved heads and shit stools around their neck, and I told God where he could go right fast. So when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know, I'd forgotten about that one meeting, but anyhow, anybody with over 10 years in Los Angeles area and a lot less anywhere else has gone to a lot of AA meetings. I know now that we have the Puritist. We have, you know, all these wonderful clans that are trying to tell us how to talk, how to walk, and how to do all these things. And I've got one word for all of them. Fuck them. Several years ago, I was called from Oklahoma, and they said, would you send me one of your tapes? I said, fuck no. Why? I said, I'm the oldest living member of Narcotics Anonymous except Jimmy Kinnon, and if you need a fucking tape, I don't want to come back there. I was chairman of the Board of Trustees at the time, and about 2 weeks later, I find out they got Johnny H. from Alcoholics Anonymous. I called him, and I said, what the fuck are you doing getting alcoholics to speak at Narcotics Anonymous? Oh, he's an addict. I said, he may be queer, I don't know, but he's not a member of Narcotics Anonymous. But they didn't take my word for it to call him. Johnny was honest enough to admit that he didn't go to NA. So they canceled him. But, you know, that just shows the mentality of the things that we're going through. Anyhow, after a few, couple of 3 years on Alcoholics Anonymous, we've got this oddball. He's a nut. Got two quarter-sized holes drilled in his head. I want to feel my brain. And every Wednesday night, he's going out to the valley to an NA meeting. Well, back in those days, they didn't have the freeways that they have now, so it was an all, you know, it was a long trip. And he kept wanting me to go with him, and I said, oh, shit, I've been there. I don't care about that. Anyhow, I'd been going to Alcoholics Anonymous for quite a while. The only thing that kept me clean during this time was the fact that I was heavily involved in institutional committees. My talents came out. I was chairman of the committee, by God. No. Anyhow, all I was hearing at this time was, I come to this wonderful program, I met you wonderful people, and everything's been wonderful. My life was falling apart. So one night I agreed to go with him, and I went out, and about 5 minutes into my bullshit, they told me, you better get your shit together, asshole, you're going to get loaded. Nobody talked to me like that in those days, but they did, and they got away with it, and I took their advice. They were talking about the things that was interesting to me, such as, how do you handle a wife? How do you handle a job? How do you handle a credit card? I'd handled them real well. I rolled them all right up to the back. You know, so I'm in deep trouble. Anyhow, about that time, why, there was trying to get the institutional group together in Narcotics Anonymous, and I happened to have an in with the man who was lieutenant in San Quentin at the time I was there. When he took me back to my cell after a guy almost killed me because I stepped on his heel, and you know how it is in the penitentiary, it was one of those days. He was about this tall, a smart-aleck punk. And he says, "Watch it, man." I said, "Fuck you, punk." I remember getting my head up over the third tier in the east block. That's the last I remember, because he was all over me like horse shit. Damn near killed me. And this lieutenant, when he took me back to my cell, told the sergeant, says, "Don't believe that son of a bitch. He wouldn't give you the right time on your own watch." And he became program director of the Sierra Center. So that's where I got my start in Narcotics Anonymous, was getting N.A. in the penitentiaries. And of course, right away, they recognized my talents, and they formed the board of trustees, and they put me on the board. And of course, things kept growing. At that time, there was two meetings, and then not I, but a guy by the name of Slick Phil and this nut started a meeting out in Redondo Beach. The speaker before me, I've told this story many times, and she's heard it. She was in Costa Mesa at the time. Now, she could find her way from Costa Mesa to Redondo Beach and then get lost going to the crapper in the meeting. She was that digging. She's come a long way since then. Some of it good, some of it bad. I liked her better then, really, most of the time. But like I said, these are opinions. Anyhow, Narcotics Anonymous then progressed, deviated up. People have migrated up to San Francisco, and we got the north and the south going. And I decided then, after seeing all this wonderful money AA was making on these conventions, that we should have a convention. And of course, we've got, you know, people on the board. Some of them's got some sense, really. We got a judge on there. He's got some. You people go into bankruptcy, you'll never be able to pay out. Oh, no, no, no. And I and this nut, and then we got Bob, and we got a couple of other people, and finally we swung it around to where we got the board to vote in our first convention. And we had our first convention, and there was 245 people there. We made about $245. And we opened our first World Service office. Now, being brilliant businessmen that we are, I knew out in front that this $245 wasn't going to pay the bill, so we got pledges for $600 a month. And we rented our first office at $200 a month. And we were in business. I don't need to tell you how much of this pledge money we got. None. I don't think we got a cent, did we, Bob? Anyway, the controversy that's going on now about the reprinting of the book on the East Coast, that's nothing new. Northern California, we were charging 15 cents, I think it was, for the little white book at that time. Northern California discovered that they could, if they got it printed and they stapled it themselves, they could do it for 3 cents. So they went in business for themselves. And all the time we go to a convention, and the Board of Trustees, of course, is meeting with the public, which is from Northern California, and they're all sitting back there shouting, "Get your shit together, man, you better get your shit together." So we finally, at our 8th World Convention, which had been turned over to a committee, and we had not received any money or any communications with the committee in about 6 years, 5 years at least, we're up at the Jack Tar Hotel. And guy's out there shouting, "You better get your shit together." And I told him how the shit gets together. That's when you get your shit together and your group gets its shit together, your area gets it together, and the region gets it together, then we will get ours together. We work different than any other organization in the world. We work the bottom up. The only two things that are constant in NAA is the primary purpose and change. The primary purpose being for me to stay clean and help another addict who still suffers. And the change is going to be about method and madness all the way through. And that's the way it's going to go. Everything that has happened to NA has been through the grace of God. I have to go back. Before I got clean, I happened to be at the 1960 World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard Bill Wilson say, talking about his consternations and his fears and of all the troubles that was going on in AA on the Alano clubs and the conventions and all this. And he says, "Finally, I had to believe that this is a God-given program. The good will stay and the bad will go." And I accepted his philosophy and I found out that it worked. Anyway, at this convention, at the Jack Tar Hotel, I went over to the Grand Poopah from the north and asked him, "Where is the next convention going to be?" He said, "Oh, the committee hadn't said." I said, "How about screw the committee? This is a people's thing." "What do you mean?" I said, "The people say where it'll go." "Well, how do you do that?" I said, "I'll take care of it." He didn't know I didn't have any authority. I just bulldogged him. That was all there was to it. Anyhow, there was four people there from Texas. Four people. They did not come there for a convention. They just happened to hear that there was a bunch of addicts up at the Jack Tar Hotel, and they came up to see what was going on. Anyhow, there was a bid put in from Santa Monica, Pasadena, and one from up north. And it was so evenly divided that we couldn't make a bid, couldn't make a call. Like I said, these four people from Texas said they wanted to put in a bid. I said, "Why not?" She said, "Don't mean nothing." Anyhow, all of a sudden, everybody started going over to the Texas side. And we wound up in Houston, Texas. And the only thing they had told us that was true, it was an old establishment. Believe me, it was. But we had one hell of a good young people's NA or AA convention. It went from Houston to Atlanta. Again, nobody was consulted. Nobody was asked. Nobody was done a damn thing. And we had another good young people's AA convention. At the end of the convention, at the spiritual meeting, they came up to me, "We're $1,300 in the hole." I said, "God, that's too bad. What can we do?" I said, "Eat it, I suppose." So somebody suggested passing the hat. I figured we might get $5. The hat came back. It had $1,100 and some in it. I said, "You can eat the rest, and I don't want to hear about it." It went from there to Wichita. And I told my wife when we left Los Angeles from Wichita, I said, "If we have another good young people's AA convention, I'm going to piss in the middle of the floor." And we had one of the best NA conventions that we've ever had, and I haven't had any complaints since. That, again, is all through the grace of God and the power of the program. Along about this time, they're starting to form a committee to write the book. I, along with several other people out here, thought that was bullshit, that no committee can write a book. But prior to this, my mind don't function too well. Prior to this, at our first convention, Sylvia M. had spent countless hours, countless dollars, getting permission from Alcoholics Anonymous to change words in the Alcoholics Anonymous book to use for Narcotics Anonymous. She brought it to our first convention. I read one paragraph, threw it over to Jack. Jack ran away, read one paragraph, threw it in a shit can. And I told her then that when the book is written, it will be written by addicts for addicts. Prior to this, about our eighth convention, Jimmy Kinnon had gotten out of the hospital. He was been sick for years. He'd gotten out of the hospital, and we went from one place to another with our World Service Office. And also, if the history of Narcotics Anonymous is ever truly written, the guy who held Narcotics Anonymous together in the early years was your next speaker. He paid the bills. He picked up the pieces. He put it back in the trunk of his car. He put it out again. He was there. He held it together while Jimmy was in the hospital. Anyway, by then, Narcotics Anonymous had started to grow. Every place that the convention went, except Houston, had flourished. There was nothing really going wrong. What happened was that Jimmy had a lot he wanted control. You see, this nut I'm talking about was our mental genius at the time. He had two times to the 10th grade. And by then, Jimmy had picked up another guy who was fairly well educated. And he did all the writing. And he was persistent. He would bring it to the Board of Trustees meeting and would say, ah, bullshit, that ain't enough. And finally, just in disgust, go ahead and print it. It don't make any difference. Nobody's going to read it anyhow. But that was a mistake because the people read it. And what they wrote was for total control. It got so bad, and through nobody's fault, other than the fact that Narcotics Anonymous outgrew the present structure. They didn't realize what was happening. You know, a lot of times Jimmy had to wait till he got his Social Security check before he could get the printing out of the press. And of course, being a one-man operation, some things may have slid between the cracks. Jimmy was not dishonest. If he had stole everything Narcotics Anonymous had, he would never have gotten even at that time. He was doing the best he could, but his ego wouldn't let him ask for help. He would come to the Board of Trustees meetings and tell us how much help he needed. And when I was chairman, I appointed a trustee member to every phase of the operation. Not one piece of correspondence did any trustee get. Oh, I take care of that. And of course, by then, the suspicions had started growing outside of California, especially down south, on the East Coast, in the Midwest. Narcotics Anonymous was starting to flourish. And they weren't, when they sent their 30 cents in to get two books, getting the two books, they're stealing my money. Which we know is, you know, wasn't true, but that's what they thought, and there was no way you could change their mind. Anyhow, Jimmy made another mistake. He held a meeting of the World Service Office Board, which he was chairman, which he had, you know, legally set up to where he was in complete control. He called a meeting of three members consisting of himself, his wife, and one of his babies, and kicked two others off the board without even notifying there was going to be a meeting. And when he did this, they came to me, and I went to Jimmy, and I told him, Jimmy, your reasoning is fine. Method is what we're talking about. One of them which had written all this shit, had gotten sick and had to move to Oregon. He hadn't attended a meeting in 2 years. The other one hadn't attended a meeting in 2 years because he was involved in other things. I said, Jimmy, the reasoning is all right. Method. Call another board meeting. Invite these people. Tell them why. Invite them. If the results, and the results couldn't have been anything but the same because it was 3-2 anyway, you cut it. I said, if the results are the same, fine. He says, I say, who is on the board? And then we came around to the book. He says, the book will be printed when I say so. I said, uh-uh. And that's where I had a 3-year fight. And if anybody wants to know why I was chairman of the board of trustees for 3 years, nobody else had the guts to take it, I'll tell you. It was so fucked up and they were so scared. Anyhow, they got the book to print. Jimmy hadn't spoken to me in a couple of years then. And he called a meeting of me and the World Service Conference chairman and the World Service Office Board meeting. Chairman of the World Service Office Board, and says, this. At the time, my inclination was to tell him, well, turn it back to the fellowship. But we had $11,000 already invested. If I took it back to the fellowship, we had another year without a book. And I sat down and I eliminated three lines, which was agreed on by the chairman of the World Service Conference and the World Service Office Board, and the shit hit the fan. I walked in on the World Service Conference chairman and he's saying, oh, the Board of Trustees did that. I didn't do that. And I told him, look, motherfucker, if you don't want to admit to it, tell them I did it because I'm through anyhow. Tell them I did it. Don't you ever say the World Service Office Board did it. And then they put the Board of Trustees into the political arena. And they had them get up and tell why they should be reaffirmed. And I sat there and I listened to all this whining about something they had nothing to do with. Make sure that everybody knew that they didn't have anything to do with me taking out. And by the time it got to me, I was mad. And when I get mad, I go brain dead. And I got up and I called them all kinds of sweethearts. And there was a few boos after I sat down. And my wife said, after all you've done, and then they boo you. I said, if some motherfucker got up and talked to me like that, I'd knock his ass out. To show you the intelligence, they put back what I had taken out that year. The following year, they took it out again, just like I had it. 5 years later, I'm in Cleveland. I'm talking to an old guy. And they'd put this lying asshole on the Board of Trustees. And I said, you know, you put a liar on the board. Oh, well, he changed. I said, what about me? He says, you had a chance to make a statement. Yeah, I did. I could have thrown $11,000 down the tubes. I could have postponed printing of the book for a year. But again, things work the way it's supposed to work. Now then, what has happened is that they have put the Board of Trustees in the political arena that no longer can you expect a ruling on a violation of the traditions, but whether it is going to be politically accepted or not. And I think that's a mistake. I sincerely hope that there's somebody, and I'm going to tell you, you're not going to get your finger in the political or financial pie that is going out there now. You're going to have to do it on your own. You see, they don't remember that for 3 years, I was a household word in Narcotics Anonymous at the expense of better than $10,000 a year to me and my wife. See, we didn't have this political pie out there, or financial pie. It's just like now, one of your RSRs comes into the World Convention from an outlying district, and all the politicians grabs him, pats him on the butt, and tell him, well, those people back there don't really know what they're talking about. If you want to be, you know, if you want us to put you on a board, well, you better. And of course, like a damn fool, he votes against the will of the people and then goes by, so on and so forth. Recently, I was talking about the printing of the book. They found out that they could print it cheaper on the East Coast than they could through the World Service Office. So they printed it, and of course, history repeats itself. I think that was handled badly, but it's been taken care of, so, you know, hopefully it won't happen again. Now then, throughout the fellowship, you've got these various clans that are trying to make this something like David Koresh and his goddamn following. The Puritist. Dude, I was a Puritist. I shot them the pure heroin when I could get it. I drank a lot of pure wine when I could get good. That was all due, you know. I'm proud, and have been proud, of Narcotics Anonymous since the beginning of time. Don't get me wrong. There has been countless hours spent on trying to prove that Narcotics Anonymous did not start in Sun Valley. I am here to tell you that I'll agree that somebody trying to help the addict did not start in Sun Valley. I think Jesus, when he crawled down through the roof to help that man who was shaking with palsy, I think that sucker was loaded. And I think since the beginning of time, there has been people trying to help the addict. Like I said, there has been thousands of countless hours of people from Georgia and Tennessee going to Washington and New York and all over to try to prove that Narcotics Anonymous did not start in Sun Valley. As I said, I agree that somebody trying to help the addict did not start in Sun Valley. But Narcotics Anonymous, as we know it today, did start in Sun Valley some years ago. And I shall be eternally grateful, even though I disagree with Jimmy Kennan on many things, I shall always be eternally grateful to that man for having the perseverance and the will to stick in there and fight and struggle and do the things that was necessary to bring us to where we are today. I was in Cleveland, as I say, when Jimmy died. I called Bob Stone in the World Service Office, and Bob says, Chuck, do you have any idea how many new meetings has been registered since the World Service Conference? The World Service Conference was in May, I believe. It was less than 3 months, and I saw probably 100. He says, 1,110 new meetings. And I would hate to guess on how many meetings we have throughout the world. I know we have a book that is published today in 5 different languages. to where addicts all over this world can get recovery if they so desire. I know that we have enough written material on any and all things. If we never publish another goddamn thing, we have enough written material that an addict, if he wishes to, will find a way to recover. I said this up north. I said, if the World Service Office closes today, if your regional office closes today, if your area office closes today, Narcotics Anonymous will continue to grow because the word has been spread of what the primary purpose is, and that is for one addict to stay clean and help other addicts who still suffer if they so desire. I heard Dr. Martin Luther King alluded to today, and that has been one of my things, is that we both have a dream, and I think that I was maybe a little luckier than Martin Luther King, that I have had the privilege of living to see my dream come true, and that is that no addict need die without at least knowing that there was a way for him to recover had he so chosen. And it's through people like you who has carried the message throughout the world that this has been made possible. You have given me a purpose in life. And do you know that now then, there are people on this program, when they reach my age, will have better than 52 years clean. 52 years. I just, one other thing that I wanted to tell you the difference used to, when we came to a meeting, it was kind of a thing. You see, when I came here, I wouldn't have thought of going to the bathroom without a shirt, tie, and suit on. You suckers have done something to me, I don't know what it is. It's been great to have been a part of this growing organization, and we have only hit the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even begun to fight. There is always going to be some kind of addiction. One last bitch that I've got, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, and that is, who do we turn our meetings over to? The newest comer who comes in the door. And then we sit back and bitch because he does what a newcomer is supposed to do. Of course, he thinks we recognized his talents. We know we want him for a fucking janitor. That, you know, we're too late or we're too sophisticated to pick up again. And then we sit around and bitch. Or we get those Mustangs in. I just love to listen to a newcomer, which means the cocksucker is sitting back there. He ain't doing nothing, but he's pointing to the newcomer. Well, I ain't that bad. Let's take back over our meetings and put them back where they should be. Let's take back over the fellowship and put it back where it should be. We do not need a board of trustees with a $100,000 goddamn budget. We need about $10 in stamps and maybe $15 in paper and for them to write an opinion. Same thing with sending tapes. We were at the Northern California Convention several years ago. Sunday morning spiritual meeting. The leader of the meeting went on for 15 minutes about how this man's message had just jumped out at him. I knew the man. The man has one hell of a message. The only thing was, that his young wife had just deballed him. And he had went into yoga, and he got up and says, Zom. And then he zoomed again. Then he stared, and this poor sucker, that the message jumped out, is up there trying to hide his face behind him. So, you know, I think for people who hate rules and regulations, we sure try to set a lot on ourselves. And I'm real proud of the people who's put this together, and I certainly hope this club goes, because it's the nicest thing that we've had yet. I want to thank you people for tolerating me, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.